Pittsburgh Steelers fans. Welcome to another episode of Steelers Friday Night Six Pack. I'm your host, as always, Tony DeFio, as well. And before I continue, as always, I'd like to ask you to please like and subscribe to our Behind the Steel Curtain YouTube channel, where we bring you live shows each and every day, including this show, the Steelers Hangover with Brian Anthony Davis and Shannon White. You saw that. You can see that every Monday. The Scobro Show with Dave Schofield and Rich, his brother Rich. That's every Tuesday. The Curtain Call during the offseason. That's with Jeffrey Benedict and Shannon White. And they almost always have an excellent guest. A Steelers Preview with Jeff Hartman, Dave, and Brian on Thursday. Touchdown Under at 5 o'clock every Friday with Maddie Peverall and Mark Davidson. We Run the North with what's his name? Tate Boys. I always forget his name. Tate Boys. We do post-game stuff. Every time there's breaking news, that they break in with a live podcast. So you could check all that out each and every week on Behind the Curtain's YouTube channel. And we also have a live Facebook side of it. So you can check us out on the Facebook side. So if you're watching this, hello, and please be nice. As I always say, those comments on Facebook are they're a little bit meaner than other places, but not much meaner. Anyway, and of course, you can check out all of our live shows after the fact on any audio platform of your choosing. And again, you can catch them anywhere. You can catch it on iHeartRadio, Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, you name it. And of course, we have a whole family of audio-only shows. We record them, and then you get to hear them whenever you want. And that includes Let's Ride with Jeff Hartman, The Live Mic with Michael Beck, The Stat Geek with Dave Schofield, From the Cutting Room Floor with Jeffrey Benedict, The War Room with Maddie Peverall, What You're Talking About with Kyle and Chris, and I think Chris. Chris does the one half hour power hour. There you go. So please check all those out. And of course, check out the editorial side where we bring you news, commentary, film breakdown. All the Steelers news you're ever going to need is right there in one little spot. It's your one-stop shop for all your Steelers needs. And let's see who we have in live at. Steeler Chick 46, who was the first one in. She says, hi, Steeler fam. Jared Devil, who just missed out. Jorge Rico is with us. George Teston. And Jorge says it's 96 degrees in El Paso, Texas. So there you go. Steeler Nation is worldwide. It's nationwide. It's worldwide. It's everywhere. And George Teston says, and I appreciate this. He says, Tony, if you didn't see yesterday's show, happy big 5. Oh, yes. That's really a surreal number. But I guess there's only one way to avoid turning 50, so I guess I shouldn't feel too depressed about it. But yeah, it was a great birthday on Thursday, and it gives you time to reflect and get excited about what the future brings. Even at 50, kids, you can still be excited about the future at the age of 50. So thank you, George. Steel Chick says happy belated birthday. South Side Doc, Allie Howard. I haven't seen Allie Howard in a while. Brian Brown, regular every week. And that's it for now. So I'm glad you guys could be with me on this Friday. As the title suggests, we're going to talk about the schedule release on Thursday. The NFL, makes a big to-do out of the schedule reveal every year. And I don't blame them because it seems to be a very popular thing. People are starting to look forward to that almost as much as they do the draft. It's really a incredible phenomenon. The NFL, as we joke about all the time, it kind of owns everything now. Every holiday, every month of the year, it just overshadows everything. And the schedule reveal is the greatest example of that, because you can just go online and get it after the fact, but people anticipate it. And I get it. They want to plan their vacations and their trips during the season, whether it's in Pittsburgh or on the road. They got to, it's a big deal to travel. You can't just do that, especially if you're traveling to see a game. There's a lot involved with that. So I get why people get excited about that. And I thought it was an interesting schedule. I mean, it's kind of fascinating. I mean, they have no games outside of the Eastern time zone, which is, you know, good for them as far as travel, and good for the fans too, who have to travel. And, you know, some people are if you're over in you know, a different country, I mean, you know, these time zones, that means so much more to you than it does to even somebody living in California trying to come over to Pittsburgh. It's a big deal. So for them to be in the same time zone all year round, it's probably a good thing for everybody involved. And, you know, it's one of those perfect storm kind of things. You know, when you have their AFC divisional partners this year are the, meaning the AFC North, is the AFC East. So you have New England, you have the Jets, you have Miami and Buffalo. So that works out perfectly. And, you know, the Eagles are that 17th game, if you will, even though it's not played last, it's the extra game. So the Eagles are that game this year, and they're playing the NFC South. They're matched with the AFC North is matched with the AFC South or the NFC South. So, you know, you have the Buccaneers coming to town. They go to Atlanta. New Orleans comes here. Then they go to Carolina. So the Raiders come here. That's part of their, I think, what was it, the second place schedule, I guess, or is it the third place schedule? I think, yeah, they have a second place schedule, because I don't think the Ravens make the playoffs last year. No, they didn't make the playoffs. Near the Browns. So they have a second place schedule. So they play, the Raiders come here and they go and play in Indianapolis. So, you know, it's a pretty interesting schedule, and they have the least amount of travel miles, as per, I think it was Adam Schefter who first reported that, 6,442 miles. So that's pretty interesting. You know, it's those little things that, you know, if you're looking to get an edge as an NFL team, you never know what little things can help you. And that might be something that helps them. They have 11 1 o'clock games, which I love. I love the 1 o'clock kickoffs. To me, it's just tradition. I just reminds me of being a kid, especially early in the year. I love the 1 o'clock games early in the year. There's just something about sitting in front of the TV at 1 p.m. on a Sunday, maybe have the windows open, and there's that early, it's not quite fall yet, but it's getting close to fall, and you have that cool breeze, that smell of fall, you know what I mean? It's like, you know, freshly cut grass and leaves, and I just love 1 p.m. games. So you have 11 of those, and of course, no surprise to anybody, they have 5 primetime games, the maximum. I don't think anybody should be surprised by that. I was talking to my brother last night on the way to my bowling match, and he was like, "Oh, they're not going to have 5 games." Like, don't you know anything about the NFL and their ratings and what teams draw the most ratings? And of course, the Steelers are right up there with, you know, a few other teams. I mean, they're one of the marquee teams. So naturally, they're coming off of another playoff year. They have a potentially rookie quarterback starting in week one. I'm sure he's going to start at some point, but maybe by week one in Kenny Pickett. So that's a big, you know, a marquee franchise with a new quarterback for the first time in 19 years after Ben Roethlisberger's career is over. That's going to be a big draw, you know. So, and then they have one game in week 18, the final game, that's still to be determined as far as what time they play the Browns at home. So that's going to be one of those deals where the NFL is going to want to know where everybody stands as far as the postseason picture. So if it's an important game, it might get moved to 4:25. It might get moved to a primetime game. Who knows? But obviously it's going to be a tough start to the year. I mean, if you've read the schedule, you know that it's going to be tough. You know, they open up at Cincinnati, the defending AFC champs. Joe Burrow, you could potentially have Kenny Pickett versus Joe Burrow, but at the very least, you're probably going to have Mitch Trubisky against Joe Burrow. So that's going to be a tall task. Of course, you have the Pats to open up the home slate a week later. And of course, I'm sure this is not going to go over well, especially if they don't get off to a good start. A few days later, they play the Browns at Cleveland on Thursday Night Football, and then they have the Jets at home, et cetera, et cetera. It's a tough first half of the year, because then you have the Bills on the road, the Bucks at home, the Dolphins on the road, and I don't think they're going to be a bargain. Same with the Eagles on the road. And as Brian pointed out the other day on the Hangover, they haven't defeated the Eagles in Philadelphia since the 60s, which I just find to be totally amazing. If you think about some of the great teams they've had since the 60s, of course, the 70s and the 90s teams were great. And of course, they had a great run under Ben and with Cowher and Tomlin. So for them to go this long without winning in Philadelphia is amazing. And then, of course, the bye comes right in the smack dab in the middle, which I think is fair. November the 6th. I think it's probably ideal for it to be later, but everybody can't have a bye late in the year. So I think this is better than it has been in the past. Usually it's like mid-October or so when they have the bye. So it's a little later this year. So I think that'll be good. So as far as like a win-loss thing, you know, I know a lot of people do that, and I don't blame them at all. You know, I hear people on the radio, the quote-unquote true professionals, mocking people, even other quote-unquote true professionals, mocking them for doing win-loss predictions. But it's a fun thing. It's a fun exercise. And you only do it one or two days out of the year, unlike mock drafts, which go on forever. So I don't blame people for doing loss thing right after the schedule comes out, because it's again, it's fun. I still think this team is going to be anywhere between a 7 and 10 or 11 win team. It has that potential, mainly based on the defense. If the defense comes back to where it was in 2019 and 2020, up until all the injuries affected at the end of the year. If it could be that kind of defense again, if it could be the kind of defense that you saw last year in week one against the Bills, which I think that was the best game I played all year on defense before all the injuries started happening with Alu and a couple other people were missing games every week, it seemed, for a while there, and it really affected the defense. And of course, Tua and Alu were out the entire year after week two. So if it could stay relatively healthy and that front seven can be the front seven it's been since 2016, late 2016, and really get after the quarterback, and of course do a heck of a lot better job at stopping the run. And the secondary, at least on paper, looks pretty solid. So if they can get through through the season unscathed, I think they can win anywhere between 7 and 11. I think they have that kind of roster. Now, if they really get fantastic quarterback play, whether it's from Trubisky or Pickett or who knows, Mason Rudolph, then that could be a big that could be a big wild card, a big X factor for how they finish. But right now I look for them to be anywhere between 7 and 11 wins. As far as predicting win-loss, I don't know. I mean, it looks like the first 8 games are going to be rough. The first 8 games before the bye. I mean, you have what, the Bengals are a playoff team. The Bills, of course, are favored to go to the Super Bowl, I think. The Buccaneers are the Buccaneers with Tom Brady and the Eagles. So, I mean, that's going to be a tough first 8 games, I think. You know, when you throw in the fact that the Browns, they're going to be playing them on the road on a short week. You have the Dolphins on the road on Sunday Night Football. So it's going to be tough. And but if they can get through those first 8 games, 4-4, somewhere in there, then that might, you know, bode well for the second half when you have, you know, the Saints at home, and they're going to be dealing with, you know, they're not the team that they used to be. The Falcons on the road, the Falcons aren't really that great anymore. They're going through a transition. Panthers aren't that great right now. So I don't know. It's going to be, it looks like a middle of the pack schedule, but they look like, again, a 7-11 win team. So they're not really at this point, a serious contender. So a middle of the pack kind of schedule as far as winning percentage. I think their winning percentage is 512, 0.512, the teams that they're playing. So that's slightly above 500. So it's not a daunting schedule by any means, but the beginning of it is pretty rough. So, but what fascinates me about schedules is not necessarily how I think they're going to do win loss wise. It's just the individual stories. You know, that's really what fascinates me. And, you know, opening up at Cincinnati, and by the way, it's the eighth year in a row that they're going to be opening up on the road, which doesn't really bother me, but it seems to be a thorn in the side, or is that the right word? It seems to irritate a lot of people that they're opening up on the road again. And I mean, whatever, it all evens out in the end, you know. I don't think there's really any disadvantage to opening up on the road other than the team you might be playing. And you know, they've gotten lucky in a lot of cases. The Giants a couple of years ago, Washington a few years before that. But the last couple of years, it's been pretty rough. You know, you had the Bills last year, which they prevailed. I think that might have been their best win of the year, actually. Of course, and now this year they have the AFC champs. But that's a great story. Because, you know, the Bengals, it's you know, are they for real? I mean, I think they're for real as far as being a good team, but it's a fascinating thing. What happens to the teams that lose Super Bowls? They kind of regress the following year. It's almost like it's better to lose the way the Bills lost last year in a heartbreaking fashion in the divisional round than it is to lose in the Super Bowl, because it seems like you take a step back the next year. Now there's a lot that goes into that. I mean, if you're obviously, if you make it to the Super Bowl, there's a pretty good chance that you finish in first place in your division, which the Bengals did. They won the AFC North. So they're going to be playing a first place schedule. So that's going to be a bit rougher for them on paper anyway, as of right now. And I think there's also it takes a toll on you when, you know, getting that far and going on that kind of a run and then coming up short. I mean, that takes a toll, you know, and to have to muster up the strength and the emotions and, you know, get all the luck that you need to get. And of course you have to stay healthy, you know, so to get back there a second year in a row, that's why I think it has a lot to do with it. But anyway, the Bengals are now seen as perhaps the class of the AFC North with the franchise quarterback and Joe Burrow and a lot of great weapons on offense. They have a pretty good defense, but the Steelers have been their longtime tormentors up until recently. The last three games, it's been the complete opposite. The Bengals have dominated Pittsburgh. But certainly over the past two or three decades, the Steelers have been the big brother that the Bengals could never really quite get by. You know, they could never quite win the big game against them. And they really haven't recently. I mean, they've beaten them up in their last three games, but none of them were games that cost Pittsburgh anything or where something was on the line for both teams, you know, like a playoff spot or a playoff game. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how the Bengals respond and how they come out. Are they going to come out and are they going to just pound the Steelers into submission like they have the last three meetings? Or could Pittsburgh possibly go in there and steal a game and maybe put the Bengals back on their heels out of the gate, you know, and have them start questioning themselves as an organization again? Yeah, we got to the Super Bowl last year. We looked good on paper, but people have been calling us the Bungles for a reason. So, you know, are we going to take a step back this year? Are we for real? Did we do enough in the offseason to add on to that AFC championship last year? You know, what's going to happen? So, you know, that's going to be fascinating. And, of course, anytime you put Bill Belichick up against a rookie quarterback potentially, that's always fascinating, and opening up at home against the Patriots, even though they're not the Patriots that they used to be. They're not a the juggernaut that they were with Tom Brady, but they're still the Patriots, and there's still a little bit of a fear in Steeler Nation of them. I know I'm always going to be leery of them until the Belichick era is past, probably. That's just how much they've dominated Pittsburgh under his watch. So, but you have another early road game against the Bills. That's a fascinating matchup because if Pittsburgh gets off to a surprisingly fast start, say they split the first two games, beat the Browns in Cleveland with Deshaun Watson. If he's even playing, he might be suspended. But say they beat the Browns, and of course, if they beat the Jets, all of a sudden they're 3-1, going on the road to play a legitimate Super Bowl contender, a complete team in the Buffalo Bills. How would they respond to that? And then what if it's the following week, you got Tom Brady, the great Tom Brady, going up against a rookie quarterback in Kenny Pickett. So potentially, anyway. So those are the kind of things that fascinate me, and the fact that they have the Ravens twice over the last 5 or 6 weeks, and of course the what I think is going to be a lot of fun, especially if both teams are good, is that December 24th, the Christmas Eve game at Heinz Field, to commemorate the 50th year anniversary of the Immaculate Reception. That's going to be a week long, just trip down memory lane not for me, because I might be old, but I'm not old enough to remember that play. I was in a crib in December of 1972 on December 23rd. But for a lot of people, it marks the beginning of the Steelers' ascension from a sad sack franchise to a marquee franchise, to NFL royalty. And it all started with the Immaculate Reception, and it was their first playoff victory in their history. And it's the most improbable play in the history of the league, in my opinion. I mean, it's there really hasn't been another play like that since. I mean, that's just how fluky and improbable it was. And it's always been a controversial play, and which I can never really figure out, because it was such a bang bang play, and why the Raiders are so certain that the call should have went their way when nobody could really accurately could come to an accurate conclusion about that play. You could watch that play a million times from a million different angles, and we have over the last 50 years, and yet you can't really come to a conclusion. So I don't know why the Raiders have always been so bitter about that play, but it's been a bone of contention with their organization since it happened, even though they've had a lot of success, or at least they did up through the early 2000s, despite that play. But it's the Raiders. What are you going to do? That's how they've always been. But it's going to be fun, and I'm looking forward to that. But that's pretty much all I have to say about the regular season schedule. But there was one little thing I didn't really quite pay attention to on Thursday, because I was out celebrating my birthday and didn't really see the schedule reveal as it happened. I kind of caught up after the fact, which I think it might be the way to go, but a lot of people don't agree. But that's what I did. I caught up after the fact, and I was surprised to discover that they will not be playing the Panthers in that final preseason game. And it's the first time that's not going to happen since 2003, from what I've read. And it kind of makes me sad for some real strange reason. I don't know why, but I've gotten so used to that final meaningless, boring preseason game between the Panthers and the Steelers. It's become a tradition. It's like, it's almost like how, if you're a Pitt or a Penn State fan, you would look forward to the, that final game between the two teams every year, even though the stakes were much, much higher than a meaningless preseason game. But, it's like you don't have many traditions in sports anymore. It doesn't seemed like anyway. So not that it was really a tradition, because it really wasn't. It was nothing official, but it just, it was probably the longest running tradition I've ever seen in a preseason matchup, though. So that's I'm kind of sad to see it go. I don't know why. I mean, people were online on Twitter talking about, well, they cut preseason to 3 games from 4. That's why. Well, okay, they did that, but why couldn't you just schedule the Panthers if it's one of your 3 preseason matchups? I don't know. It seemed like the two organizations have a pretty decent relationship. David Tepper is from Pittsburgh. He once held a minority share in the team, and now he owns the Panthers. So I'm sure that you know, there's goodwill between the two organizations. I don't know why they decided not to play each other this year, although they are going to play in the regular season. So I guess there's that, but I'll miss that Panthers matchup, and hopefully it comes back soon. So believe it or not, that's pretty much all I have to say about Steeler news this week. There really wasn't much pressing news other than the schedule reveal. Rookie camp opened up on Friday. I didn't really hear any major news out of that event. It's going to go on all weekend, of course. Usually after a day or two, you start to hear stories about so-and-so looking confident and picking up things quickly, even though they're mostly just run-throughs, and so-and-so having the deer in the headlight look. So I'm sure you're gonna be reading and hearing about those kind of stories as the days progress. But, you know, I mean, it's, you know, rookie camp. I mean, it's just really about getting them acclimated. It's kind of like an orientation. That's how I would view it. You know, I don't know if they view it that way, but that's what it seems like to me. I mean, you bring all these people in, you introduce them to the coaches, you show them around the facilities, and then you put them through some run-throughs. Maybe give, you know, obviously you give them the playbooks. I'm sure they already had the playbooks after they were drafted, but you go over to playbooks with them, you get them used to your terminology, all those other things. I'm sure it's Mike Tomlin always says he doesn't really take anything from rookie camp or OTAs or mini camp. He doesn't really start evaluating them until training camp. So I don't know. I don't know if there's anything major to take out of something like a rookie camp, other than, you know, it's fun to see who's picking things up quickly and who isn't, but just because that's happening doesn't mean it's going to stay that way. I mean, it's, you know, I've been new at jobs and I totally struggled when I first started, and I was the slowest one or whatever. And, you know, by the time I figured things out, I was faster than everybody, right? I did my job better than everybody. So, you know, you're going to have people that come in and are confident right away, and other people who are maybe, you know, a little backward, or maybe, you know, a little nervous, and that is reflected in how they perform in something like this. So I don't really read too much into it. It's really what happens in training camp. That's what I start really getting, paying attention and seeing what these rookies are made of. And, you know, last year during training camp is when Dan Moore came on. I mean, he was one of the stories of training camp, and he won the left tackle job, and he stayed there all year. So, you know, I don't think anybody was talking about Dan Moore during rookie camp or OTAs or mini camp or anything, but during training camp, that's when he really got on everybody's radar as a 4th round pick. So, but other than that, that's all I have to say tonight. And I think I'll take some questions to round out the show. And case in point, Allie Howard says, can't wait for some video coverage of the camps. Yeah, I don't know if you're going to see a whole lot of that with the rookie camps. You'll get some stories, no doubt. You're gonna get some stories from the people covering. And I think it's the first time now since the pandemic that maybe reporters are going to be there in person. I think, I'm not sure, were they there in person last year? I can't remember, but certainly this year they're going to be. So maybe we'll get some more one-on-one contact with these guys, and we can kind of see their personalities, and And that'll be pretty cool. Ryan O'Toole joins us. Kathy Ford joins us. And Allie Howard says 17-0, just like every year. That's his prediction. Okay, well, I hope you're right. That'd be great, wouldn't it? Talk about commemorating a 50-year anniversary when the Dolphins went undefeated in 1972. If the Steelers can do that, that would certainly be a fitting way to celebrate that. I'm sure the Dolphins wouldn't agree, but it'd certainly be fun if you're a Steeler fan. And Mark Tobin says, so grateful that the Steelers aren't playing the Panthers anymore in the preseason, I assume. I don't know why. That's to me, it's doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things, but Mark is happy they're not playing them. So that's one vote for him and one vote for me. Or one pro-Panther, one anti-Panther. Brian Brown asks, has anyone actually seen Matt Canada's so-called genius offense with jet sweeps and mobile quarterbacks? Not really. I mean, we saw a little bit of it early in 2020, the jet sweeps and the motion, but not as much as you're going to see moving forward with a more mobile quarterback. You know, when Ben was under center or behind center in 2021, I mean, he was basically nowhere near the mobile athlete he was in his prime. So it was hard to gauge Canada's offense then in that regard. And of course it was hard for Canada to implement the full playbook. I mean, everybody knows it was kind of like a marriage of Canada's philosophy and Ben's, what he was used to, his philosophy. And that's kind of, he had a blend of Canada and sort of the Bruce Arians, Todd Haley, Randy Fichtner offense that Ben was used to. And then you had Canada's influence, and that's what you had the last couple of years. Well, this year it's going to be all Matt Canada. So, and he's going to have mobile quarterbacks to implement it. Even Mason Rudolph, if he somehow wins the job, he's way more mobile than Ben was in his later years. So, no, we haven't really seen it, but we're going to this year. Yeah, Donovan Carey says, I find it odd that Steelers aren't playing the Panthers this preseason. Maybe there was a falling out between the two organizations. Who knows? Maybe a disagreement between the two organizations. I don't know. I doubt that. It was probably just a scheduling thing they couldn't overcome logistically for one reason or another. Who knows? I mean, you know, maybe Heinz Field or whatever. Maybe there was scheduling conflicts. Who knows? Southside Docs asks, how much longer do you think Tomlin will realistically coach? Do you think his coaching style is as adaptable as Belichick's? Well, I think it's, I mean, I'm not sure if Belichick is as adaptable as people think he is. But Tomlin has adapted over the years. I mean, you know, within the last 10 years, he's gone from the Dick LeBeau defense to more of the defense that he's familiar with. I mean, they've gone from like a Bruce Arians style offense, and then they brought in Todd Haley, and that they changed the offense drastically under him, and now they're going to try to change it more under Matt Canada. He's adapting to the fact that you need a mobile quarterback in today's NFL, people who can run the RPO kind of offense, that kind of thing. So, I mean, I think he's already shown a lot of abilities to adapt. And how long do I think he's going to coach? He was on the Rich Eisen show right after the draft, and he seemed pretty positive that he was going to coach a lot longer than Bill Cowher. I mean, he's pretty much right where Bill Cowher was when he retired or resigned, 15 years. So I can see him threatening the the tenure of Chuck Knoll, who coached 23 years, the longest tenured coach in team history. I could see him surpassing that. You know, I mean, again, you know, a lot of it's going to be predicated on what happens at quarterback, because if they hit on another quarterback soon after Ben, then, you know, you're going to have a contender for the next however many years. So, you know, why would you get rid of Tomlin if you're contending? So, you know, if they hit on Kenny Pickett, right out of the gate after Ben retires, then, you know, that's probably going to add years to Tomlin's career. He's said many times that he's a football junkie. I mean, he seems to really love football. I mean, just really love the sport, you know. So if you're ever wondering, you know, if he doesn't get his team prepared, I doubt that's the case, that he has a hard time getting his team prepared, because he seems to really enjoy the process of studying film and learning about these players. I mean, going on the road and scouting and interacting with these guys. So he seems to really love the game, and he seems to have a lot of energy for it. You know, he just turned 52, you know, 50 as well a couple months ago. So he's still a relatively young coach. He doesn't seem burned out. So I can see him coaching another decade here, you know. And I know that you might say, oh, I don't want him coaching another decade. Well, I mean, if they have success and win more championships, then, you know, that changes everything. So it's, you know, that's all I have to say about that. And Brian Brown says the Steelers need to go back to the LeBeau defense. They were number one. Well, I mean, it's not that simple. I mean, it's the league has changed a lot over the last 10 years. Basically, the league caught up to the 3-4 defense, that zone blitz defense. And that's, you know, things have changed. There's no, you know, like 3-4, 4-3. There's so much hybrid. There's so much variety with defenses now. You know, that's why you see these teams drafting these players that with a lot of position flexibility. You know, they could play dime linebacker. They could play safety, inside linebacker, outside. They could play different places along the defensive line. So it's not like it used to be. You know, defenses for the most part are not necessarily lighter, but they're quicker. They're better athletes than they were 10 years ago. So, you know, I like the nose tackle that is very important for the 3-4 defense, that the guy it clogs up the middle, takes up blockers. Those kind of nose tackles are really not around anymore, you know, like, you know, so it's hard to say bring back the 3-4. I just think, you know, you have to basically adapt to the times. And somebody asked earlier, is Mike Tomlin an adaptable coach? Well, obviously he's adapted in that regard over the last decade or so. So yeah, he is adaptable. Ryan O'Toole asks, Tony, any thoughts on them playing Christmas Eve, or did you already mention that? I hate it. I mean, it doesn't bother me. You know, I mean, they're the Steelers. They're going to get these games. There's, you know, there's a price to be paid for being a popular team with a fan base that's international, you know, that everybody wants to see. And I mean, it's, you know, it's, what are you doing on the holidays anyway? You're spending time with your family and you're often gathered around the TV watching something. So, you know, if you have a family full of Steeler fans, you can gather around the TV and watch a game on Christmas Eve. It doesn't bother me, you know, and then they play on New Year's. But what are you doing on New Year's anyway, but watching football, college football, but now you get to watch some NFL action. So, It's fine, you know. But I again, to repeat, I'm more excited about the 11 1 o'clock games. I just love 1 o'clock games. Brian Brown is the opposite. See, I mean, this, you know, we have a diverse fan base. Brian hates the idea of Christmas Eve, and Brian Brown loves it. Best gift I'll ever receive, he says. There you go. That's even better than a Porsche. I mean, to me, that'd be a much better gift. But you know, who knows? Maybe you already have a Porsche. I don't know. Ryan O'Toole says, I don't see my girlfriend being happy with me skipping her family thing to stay home and watch the Christmas Eve game. He's very emphatic about that. Well, Ryan, I mean, you know, you got to pick your battles. You got to pick your battles, Ryan. You know, Steeler game or relationship bliss. What's more important? You know, can you still tape games? I don't know. You can always watch the game after the fact. You know, I mean, sometimes you just have to lose one battle now so you can win a more important battle later, right? What if they make the playoffs? And your girlfriend wants to do something on that day, and you say, "Honey, it's the playoffs." But if you already get if you stay home to watch the Christmas Eve game, then she's going to hold it against you if you want to do that again during the playoffs. So I'd say, hey, whatever you need, honey, that's what I would do. But don't take my advice. I'm a 50-year-old bachelor, so what do I know? Southside Dogger, some relationship advice. And they say you can listen to the audio feed on your phone. But I think Ryan wants that man cave experience. He wants to sit there and absorb it all. And I get it, you know. You know, there are only 17 games a year, so you hate the thought of missing just one, but I mean, it's Christmas. What are you going to do? Clinton nicely says Steelers games are more important. Yeah, well, I'm sure a lot of people would agree with you, Clinton, including Ryan. All right. What else we have here? John Boutte, I think that's how you say the name. Oops, I missed the, there we are. And they join, that's a new one. Welcome to the show, John. With the receiver price, do you see the Steelers not signing Johnson? I can see it, of course. I could definitely see them not doing it. But as far as that price is concerned, I said this a few weeks ago, they're going to have to pay one of their receivers that kind of money eventually if they want to keep somebody really good. And you can debate Deontay Johnson's merits as being a really good receiver or not. He certainly had a productive year last year. He made his first Pro Bowl. You know, when you bring in a couple of really promising rookies in George Pickens and Calvin Austin III, if they develop into really good young receivers, and if Chase Claypool reaches his potential that a lot of people think he has yet to reach, well, that's three really good receivers. You can afford to walk away from a Deontay Johnson. But again, you're going to have to pay these guys eventually. And, you know, as we all know, they've only given two second contracts to two receivers. That was horrible grammar. They've only given a second contract to two receivers in the free agency era, and that's Hines Ward and Antonio Brown, two all-time greats. So it might be something where they might have to change the times again and start giving more money to receivers who aren't all-time greats. It just happens to be really good for their era. So we'll see how that Johnson thing unfolds. Southside Doc says, the sooner you pay them, the cheaper it will be. It will become as percentage of cap space. Well, yeah, and you know, today's expensive contract might be tomorrow's bargain. I mean, we see this all the time. You know, they signed Antonio Brown to his last big contract, I think in 2016 or 2017. And, you know, by 2018, he was already disgruntled over his contract. I mean, he was the best receiver in the world, but, you know, he didn't want to honor the contract as far as he didn't want to be the second, third, or fourth best or highest paid receiver. So that was one of the reasons why that relationship failed. But to your point, the salaries continue to go up each and every year. So, you know, if Johnson turns into a real gem over the next few years, but you have him locked into a deal now, well, he might seem like a bargain by 2025, 2026. You never know. So, all right. And Ryan makes a good point. I've had plenty of relationships and they've all ended so far. And he says, the Steelers will never leave and take half your Keflon. I think that's what it says. I don't know what that word is. It's not. Oh, Keflon cookware said, I'm not that fancy, but I get it, Ryan. Yeah, you're right. The Steelers are the one constant relationship in all of our lives, whereas romantic ones come and go often. So, hey, you have a real decision to make there, Ryan. But you have 7 months to go, so you can plan, maybe butter your girlfriend up, maybe do some nice things for her before the 24th of December. Maybe fake an illness, you know, start coughing and who knows. And on that note, I think I'm gonna call it a night. It was a fun show, and I had a great time talking to everybody out there. And I hope you all have a great weekend. And until I see you on Monday with Brian and Shannon on The Hangover, as always, go Steelers. And one more thing, it's an inside joke. Not joke, but an inside comment. Great job, Ava Thompson. She'll know what that means. All right, you guys take care. Stop and check them out.